The Genesis Communications Network is sponsored by the U.S. Money Reserve, your exclusive source for gold and silver precious metals. Visit them online at usmoneyreserve.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So we continue our discussion with Micah Hanks, who is serving as guest and guest co-host this week as Chris O'Brien's on Walkabout. So you started in response to my question about the major contributions being made, particularly more recently in the UFO field. Where would you want to take that?
Well, let's take it back a few decades. Today, it's not that there aren't researchers who are really contributing a lot. And I think that there would be people, let's be very fair, because I think before we can be critical of others, we have to be critical of ourselves and understand our own shortcomings. There are many days, and this has been happening a lot lately, where I've, despite all that I've tried to do with my own assessment of the phenomena, my own urgings to the community, that these are things that should have to change in order to really be able to get back to brass tacks on how we're studying UFOs. I still find, Gene, that I'll wake up and I'll say, is what I'm doing really worthwhile? Am I really doing anything? Should I go to the National Archives like Stanton Friedman has done and start looking for new information? Should I start, you know, filing Freedom of Information Act requests like Nick Redfern does and try and find new information? I know that there are some researchers, including John Burroughs, who I spoke to recently when we were at a conference together in Eureka Springs. He seems to be, I think, making some very interesting headway with the Freedom of Information Act requests. But I began to think about this, and this is, by the way, no criticism of John, by the way, because we had a great conversation. But I do think that one of the fundamental issues that I've begun to see is when we talk about ufology, really the basic definition of what ufology is an attempt at trying to study scientifically claims of unidentified flying objects and other aerial phenomena. And I think that as we progress through time, we've begun to see the utilization of this similar but very different term, UAP, as opposed to UFO. And a friend of mine, Jason Bradley, one of my skeptic friends, had recently asked, he said, I don't have a problem with that, but I was just curious as to why I've seen you employing that term variously as opposed to UFO. Do you think that it brings more merit to the subject or something along those lines? And frankly, I don't know that it brings any more merit. I merely think that UAP, unexplained aerial phenomena, as opposed to unidentified flying object, UAP seems to be, as many would say, a bit more inclusive of phenomena that may not be structured, mechanical, intelligently controlled objects. I think that there are a wide variety of aerial phenomena that constitute the broader collection of UFO reports that include earthquake lights and geophysical phenomena, atmospheric phenomena like ball lightning, and there may be other things too. Which a radiative phenomena that actually comes from someplace far, far away, but nonetheless, which might present an illumination observable in the sky, which our current knowledge does not completely account for. To give a brief example of what I mean, there are radiative bursts that sometimes are called sky flashes. And I'm not talking about these flashes that like lightning, but in the absence of thunder that light up the entire sky. I'm talking about on a clear night, points of light that suddenly appear and then disappear in the night sky. They aren't moving. We're not talking about something like a satellite or a bit of space debris reflecting light. We're talking about a sudden radiative burst from someplace in deep space. I've actually observed these on two occasions myself and became curious enough because of my background. I've got a lot of experience, Gene, as an amateur studying the night sky. Guys like Phil Plait, who actually I like his writing as an astronomer, but in Astronomy Magazine a couple of years ago about how people who believe in UFOs don't look up. No, that's not true. I spend a lot of time, and every night that it's clear and the weather's favorable, outside in my backyard with a telescope, if I can. When you spend a lot of time studying the sky, you do see a lot of interesting things. I've seen, you know, satellites, debris, the International Space Station at probably its very brightest. Of course, meteors and other things like this, iridium flares reflecting sometimes extremely bright light back at Earth. There are a variety of things that once you become accustomed to seeing, you can watch other videos like those of Stephen Greer and people who go out there, as I have jokingly said before, they sing Kumbaya and meditate and try and call UFOs. I've watched them film iridium flares. I've watched them film bioluminescent plankton at the ocean with infrared cameras. I've watched them film all kinds of very easily explainable natural phenomena and call these UFO contacts. And it's quite laughable, very laughable, in fact. Now, that said, these radiative bursts that I've observed, I was curious enough with what I'd seen that I wanted to know, okay, well, what could this be? And I referred to the scientific literature. Specifically, I was able to find something in the collected data by William R. Corliss. And certainly enough, there was an article that had appeared in the Science Journal about these sky flashes that naked eye astronomers had described seeing, which, interestingly, infrared equipment and telescopes had not seen, though they were pointed in the same general region of the sky. So there are elements that are present in the scientific literature that and even science articles that are peer-reviewed that talk about this phenomena. So as we can see, there are a lot of different things that may constitute natural phenomena that I think still fall into the category of weird lights and phenomena seen in the sky. So UAP, I think, covers that basis a little better. But in the broader sense of things, I still find problems with when we're talking about what appear to be intelligently controlled structured objects. As far as UFOs, we've got a lot of issues. First of all, like we've addressed already, Gene, many modern researchers, they don't really seek to try and get down to the nitty-gritty details and understand what kind of things in the sky might constitute UFO reports. They really, I think, ufology, rather than being scientific study of this phenomena, has become more and more a political movement that seeks to try and garner information by pressing government for details and pushing for this so-called disclosure. And this is very important because rather than scientific study of the phenomena, the political movement, with its over-reliance on government eventually releasing details about UFOs, actually, I think, Gene, may present some dangers.
I think it's a cop-out. I think when you say, well, the government knows it, so that means, in effect, we don't have to do anything except, well, we assume they're spaceships. But since the government knows, just make them tell us. And we can go home and go to bed or whatever it is.
You hit the nail on the head, my friend, as I knew you would, by the way.
So I've been hitting a lot of things in my head lately because I'm thinking I might knock some sense into myself.
I think you already have, though, Gene. And it seemed to have happened a long time ago. I say it every time I come on the show, and I'll say it at least once here, that this is one of the shows I enjoy listening to, one of the few podcasts that in the time that I have I do try to tune into because of the kind of sense that you guys attempt to make of this in the serious discussions that are had. But that said, what you just pointed out, the cop-out as it relates to disclosure, even if it is well-intended, the problems that disclosure presents are as follows, and I can really narrow this down to 2 points. People may, in their effort to understand the phenomena and the social movements that have been built around the ideologies over time. In other words, when I cringe when I hear people say the UFO movement, we got to get people mobilized within this movement and get, you know, really pressure our politicians and get them to release this information. Well, when we hear that, the problem is that, you know, yeah, there is a movement built around UFOs. And what is the predominant belief within that so-called movement? That E.T. is visiting and that the government knows this and that they've maybe worked with him. Dwight Eisenhower went and met with him, and that this is being withheld by the government. Now, is there a shred of hard evidence, any decent proof that would, you know, again, satisfy a biologist, a physicist, a chemist, that seems to substantiate that belief? No. If, let us presume, that is indeed a mythology that has been built around the broader study of some tangible phenomena which constitutes actual UFOs, if that belief ended up being unsubstantiated, but people's belief in it enough was great so that they would go to government and persistently request this information, if the data doesn't exist, we are wasting our time by asking for it. Conversely, let's presume that it is true. It's all true. Let's say that there was a saucer recovered from Roswell, New Mexico in 1947. Alien bodies were retrieved. They've been back engineering these things out there at Area 51. Let's say the whole thing, Bob Lazar, all these people, they're dead on. It's all true. And let's say that this is indeed the greatest secret known to humankind, which is the very reason it is not known, and it's kept from the public. Any level of disclosure that people might hope to attain through political bodies, governing bodies, it is something that has not been released, and in likelihood in the United States probably wouldn't. And if we lobbied a government, you know, this so-called truth embargo that some people talk about, I'm just not convinced that if something of that magnitude existed, that we would necessarily obtain it through political action. So the shortcomings of disclosure are that if nothing exists, we're wasting our time, and we may very well be wasting our time if something does exist, because we can't give ourselves to this hopeful notion that it's just going to be released by government. So I say that either way you look at it, really, to me, there's a strong case to be made for independent civilian research that is scientifically minded that seeks to study UFOs.
In connection with that, I'm going to ask you about the classification system for UFOs, which go back to the days of Dr. J. Allen Hynek, and maybe they need to be changed. Lots of things need to be changed. But what doesn't have to be changed is the fact that we have Micah Hanks with us of the Graylian Report. With Gene and Micah, you're in
the Paracast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
Today, how to incorporate your business in just 10 minutes so you won't lose everything if you get sued. Step 1, stop putting it off. If you're not incorporated and someone sues your business tomorrow, it's not just your business at risk. You can lose everything, your home, your car, even your life savings. Step 2, call the following number for a free 10-minute incorporation guide from Incorporate.com. 1-800-941-5257. They don't provide legal or financial advice. They just make incorporating quick and easy. So you can incorporate or form an LLC in just 10 minutes. That number again is 1-800-941-5257. Step 3, congratulate yourself. By taking just 10 minutes to incorporate your business or form an LLC, you protected your home, your car, and your life savings. And that is how you incorporate your business in just 10 minutes. But hurry while they're still giving away these 10-minute incorporation guides for free. Call 1-800-941-5257. That's 1-800-941-5257.
Ted Anderson telling you about Jordan Rubin's Beyond Organic Green-Fed Raw Cheddar Artesian Cheese featuring whole milk created through ancient dairy breeding. Unpasteurized, untreated whole milk on the same farm the cows graze. Containing natural sources of omega-3s, CLA protein, calcium, probiotics, and enzymes. I have never tasted cheese this good, and you need to try it. Contact your Youngevity distributor or call 877-878-4203 or go to GCNteam.com.
This is it. For the first time ever on this station, U.S. government gold offered at cost for only $139 each. With Wall Street suffering its worst start to a trading year in history, now is especially the time to be paying attention to gold. This first time ever, U.S. legal tender government gold offered at cost for only $139 each is from the U.S. Money Reserve. Call them at 1-866-944-GOLD. Gold is on the move, so don't miss out. For the first time ever on this station, U.S. government gold offered at cost for only $139 each. 1-866-944-GOLD or online at usmoneyreserve.com. Ask for a free 55-page gold buyer's book. Plus, get a free Walking Liberty half dollar just for reading this must-have book. Get your free gold book, your free half dollar, but most importantly, get your gold at cost for only $139 per coin. 1-866-944-GOLD.
So you've got to take a state construction license exam or certification. Can't decide on what books or what chapters to study? Discover right now how you can eliminate unnecessary books and wasted study time. At ContractorExam.com, our study materials zero in on state-required test topics in an effective, multiple-choice format. So whether you're a plumber, electrician, general contractor, or other construction-related trade, ContractorExam.com will help get you prepared. Visit us at www.ContractorExam.com today.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So, Micah Hanks, the classification system for UFOs. Tell us more.
You know, when we talk about classification systems for UFOs, I want to, first of all, go back to the literature and explain what we mean. You know, who is really making headway with the UFO subject? today. And the problem, I guess, we begin to see is really that although there are many people who are very knowledgeable and very intelligent in their investigations, the so-called scientific effort to study UFOs has gradually over time become one that involves more historical and investigative work. And also it is one that is very heavily politicized and has become, in the minds of some, a very political movement toward obtaining information by lobbying the government. And I'm not criticizing those, because some of the great work that has been done by people like Stanton Friedman, groundbreaking work, in fact, and some of the data that he has retrieved from FOIA and the National Archives, it absolutely should not be overlooked. That said, though, what's interesting is when I was with Stanton, he and I were in a car together being taken to a conference back in February out in California. And it was one of the coolest and most surreal experiences of my life, Gene, because I never get to really just hang out one-on-one with Stanton like this. And we were driving up through the hills. Our driver had asked if we'd like to stop and have lunch. And neither of us were really hungry, but the driver said, "I'm starving. If you guys don't mind, I got a great sandwich shop I want to take you to." It was February, but it felt like spring. It was just beautiful. And we stopped in Riverside, California, and Stanton and I are sitting there having pastrami sandwiches, and we had the best conversation. And I asked him, I said, "Stanton, what do you think about Alan Hendry?" Now, a lot of people today probably wouldn't even know who Alan Hendry is. He's no longer really involved at all in UFO studies. Stanton had said, Hendry and I, we had a lot of different opinions about things. And in my estimation, he was a little too skeptical. And Hendry certainly was a skeptical-minded researcher. But he, in fact, actually, for a period of a couple of years, was the primary investigator with the Center for UFO Studies in Chicago, working under J. Allen Hynek. And I bring him up here because, again, I think that as far as people who have really, rather than doing the lobbying and the political kind of work and the historical and the investigative work, Hendry was out there calling people. He was calling and discussing observations made by witnesses to the Center for UFO Studies. He was calling airports. He was calling advertising plane companies. He was calling the National Weather Service. He was investigating possible explanations for things that were seen. And in the minority of reports, there were cases that could not be explained through prosaic phenomena. He wrote a book in 1979 called The UFO Handbook that even the arch debunker Philip Klass said was one of the most important books on UFOs ever written. And boy, let me tell you, it is. There aren't many copies on Amazon, but you can still buy it. And I bought one and recently told our good friend Greg Bishop that he needed to get one as well. It's one of the most fascinating books if you're really interested in studying UFOs through science that could be read. And in the book, it was interesting because Hendry was discussing the initial classification system that Hynek had employed. This goes all the way back to the time that Hynek had been a science advisor to the U.S. Air Force with their Project Blue Book. Now, let's keep in mind that Hynek had said early on that he was a skeptic, and as time went on, he really began to think that there was just too much to this phenomena, that it could be all explained through swamp gas and other prosaic phenomena. But his initial classification system, which he describes in the Hynek UFO report, and I think before that also in the UFO phenomena, a scientific inquiry, he discusses this basic classification system that would help him group types of observations. The first were nocturnal lights, and then the second, which is the one I really began to have problems with, daylight disks. And Hynek himself would say, a daylight disk was sometimes egg-shaped, spherical, tubular. Sometimes they were just, amorphous blobs, but they were things that were seen in the daylight. In other words, they weren't all disks. And it seemed apparent to me that this daylight disk was really very well informed by the meme that goes all the way back to Kenneth Arnold, the idea of a flying saucer or a disk, when in fact there are varying interpretations of what Arnold actually saw. He described them as their locomotion was more like a disk skipping across water, but he didn't necessarily say that they were disk or saucer shaped. Not to say that there aren't certain UFO reports that don't actually involve disk or saucer shaped craft. The next tier of classification that Hynek talked about, of course, and Gene, I know you know all these, but for those just as a recap in the listening audience, we had radar visual cases, and then we had the groupings of close encounter cases, which were the close encounter ones. A UFO observed interacting physically with its environment became the second close encounter grouping. And then the third close encounter grouping, CE3s, would be a UFO observed apparently with occupants or entities that might have been associated with that object. After Hynek died, there were other groupings that were introduced just as well. The CE4s, which involve essentially physical transport of an individual between two locations as it relates to a UFO observation, which would indicate what appears to be an abduction. There's the fifth category, and this is where things get a little weird because there are differing interpretations of what a CE5, Close Encounter of the Fifth Kind, should be. The first interpretation had been one that Jacques Vallée had called for. He believed that a physical injury case where a person had been physically affected or injured or had a mark left on them by an interaction with the UFO, this was a CE5. First of all, that a daylight disc isn't always a disc. And furthermore, we could say that, again, if a CE2, Close Encounter of the Second Kind, involves a UFO which apparently affects the environment in some way, well, that might also involve individuals. And so that's very similar to Vallée's interpretation of what a CE5 would be. You can start to see that these kind of spill over into one another. And I wonder sometimes if things hadn't gotten a little convoluted, the classification terminology didn't utilize the best terminology for the phenomena it attempted to describe. I'll say at this point, if people are interested in reading further about this, at my website, micahanks.com/blog, you can article there that is titled Toward a Better Ufology, Applying Science to the Study of UAP, where I actually break down a new classification system that we can get into as long as we're not getting too close to a break.
Why don't you be brief about it, how this new classification system would differ from the old, and then we can expand upon it in the next segment.
This is a new classification system. Rather than with all the close encounter cases, it really breaks things down into a 6-point classification system that consolidates some of the old ones and also accounts for new phenomena as well as new technologies with a system of checks, as it were, a kind of filtration system. And the categories, very simply, are nocturnal luminous phenomena, daylight luminous phenomena, aerial craft or structured objects, objects corroborated with radar or other technology, which I'll cover in the next segment, objects that interact physically with individuals or the environment, and finally, objects accompanied by beings or apparent operators. We can talk more about it, though, in the next little portion.
All right. We're going to try to figure this out, but we still have a little bit of time left. So why don't you continue? Go for another minute or so.
The reason for the institution of this new series is because I think that, as we, I think, can all agree, we have new technology, namely drones, which certainly can account for some observation of things seen in the sky. We also have new technology available at our disposal that I think help broaden the ways that UFOs can be studied. Hynek first instituted his classification system decades ago. It was still in use decades later when the Center for UFO Studies was operating, when Alan Hendry was writing his book on UFOs. Today, there seems to be, apart from, again, civilian groups like MUFON and others, that use their own kind of methods of inquiry, I haven't seen recently a very serious standardized kind of classification system on par with what Hynek used. So what I'm hoping to institute with this is a new system, a modernized system, and one that works a little more simply with science in mind as it applies to the study of UFOs.
Okay, a new UFO classification system after what was done in the 1970s with Dr. J. Allen Hynek and the people he worked with at the Center for UFO Studies. Chris O'Brien is on walkabout. That's all I'll say. He's definitely out there. We have Micah Hanks of Graylian Report with Gene and Micah. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body Brain and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
Hi, Peter Picaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com, ParanormalDate.com, and use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Are you tired of commuting to a job that makes someone else rich, working harder than ever, but getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our opportunities, you can start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss, work from home, and live a happier life. At Be the Boss Network, you'll find hundreds of work-from-home opportunities that you can literally start today and be earning money as soon as next week. Go to freedom106.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss. Get out of the rat race. Work from home. Go to freedom106.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 106.com. Go to freedom106.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You be the boss. Go to freedom106.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite, a 7-herb combination made from garlic, cayenne, bilberry, hawthorn, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Each herb was chosen for their abilities to help improve irregular heartbeats, chest pain, lower cholesterol, as well as normalize blood pressure and clean and strengthen arteries, plus much, much more. Doctors have taken people off of some or all of their pills just because they believe their patients got better while taking Extendovite. Get the dependability of Extendovite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
This is Jacques Vallée, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Okay, the classification system, the new one that you're proposing. Number one, and I don't know if you've been specific enough about this, what's wrong with the one we have?
Well, the one that we have dealt with for a number of years, again, the first point that I made about that was that, we have this designation of what are called daylight disks. That's what Hynek used to refer to any number of different kind of things that are seen in the daylight. Again, I think I would make a differentiation between what he called nocturnal lights and then any kind of a structured object that might be seen in the daylight, which, of course, as I've already pointed out, may not necessarily be disc-shaped. Now, Hynek certainly knew that, and he certainly made a case for the fact that any number of things might fall under that categorization that he used, the daylight discs. And again, I think that term that he used borrowed heavily from the flying saucer meme that emerged right after 1947 with the Arnold case. But the problem is, and this is another issue I think that we see, nocturnal lights would be any kind of an illumination that might be seen at night. But let's think about this for a moment. Let's say that you see a group of lights at night, okay? And let's say that they're flying in an apparent triangular formation. Well, the lights that you see could be interpreted in one of two ways with the lacking visibility that nighttime presents. Either these are three points of light that are attached to a larger object, or these are three independent objects that are traveling in formation. Now, one might assume that if daylight luminous phenomena were observed, that these phenomena might not be interpreted the same way that they would be at night. For instance, if you see these three points at night, you're not sure if they're attached to a larger object or flying in formation. But in the daylight, if they were attached to an object, presumably, and this is putting aside, theories about different kind of cloaking technologies and things that UFOs might use, there is some evidence for this in certain literature about the subject. But again, if you see illuminations in the daylight, you're going to see, again, three points of light. If there's no apparent object between them, it becomes all the more clear that in the daylight, these illuminations, one observes, are flying in formation rather than being attached to a craft. Because if there were a craft in the daylight, you'd be able to see it. I hope that's clear. So the point is that I thought it would be interesting to make a distinction between luminous phenomena observed at night and in the daylight. And the reason for the distinction between the daylight luminous phenomena and what I would call structured objects is because, frankly, as we progress scientifically, we have learned an awful lot more about the different varieties of luminous phenomena that appear to be of natural origin, namely ball lightning-type plasmas, earthquake lights, and things like this. So when luminous phenomena is observed and there's enough daylight to be able to distinguish it from being a part of some other object, I think that that is something that certainly has to be taken into consideration with UFO studies. So the first two tiers of a new classification system, as I was putting this together, involve the nocturnal luminous phenomena, as Hynek had first proposed. But then the second one, rather than daylight disks, is daylight luminous phenomena. And I think it's, again, important that we make those two distinctions. Then in the third designation I propose, we've got what we call the aerial craft or structured objects. And I'm careful to say aerial craft or structured objects because some of these may appear to be, you know, I don't know if you'd want to call them planes, but I think that there are a variety of things that, you know, would look more like a man-made kind of a craft, which simply is unidentifiable. Kind of like, let's look at some classic literature that describes something similar. Ghost rockets, for instance. The early reports of these things seen over Scandinavia, they were likened very much to man-made technologies, but we didn't know where they came from. So we have aerial craft. And then there's also the idea that there's something that's extremely exotic that we might not so easily liken it to in terms of things that we know to exist, but it nonetheless appears to be something that is designed or constructed and maybe under intelligent control, hence these structured objects. Now, again, you can tell that with a structured object seen in the sky, you would probably, you know, presume that this would be something seen in the daytime. But let's say that you see something that is obviously some sort of a material structure seen at night. Many people, when they describe, for instance, these large triangle-shaped UFOs, they describe rather than seeing the lights, they say that we were standing outside, it was just after dark, and what we saw was a physical shape moving through the sky that darkened the sky and obscured the stars, which would seem to be, now this is interesting, if no lights were present, there's no luminous phenomena associated with it, but a structured object was nonetheless implied, and thus we could see that a structured object could appear at night as well. When Hynek started talking about the radar visual cases, which were his third point on his classification system, you know, I think that it's important to point out, Gene, that with radar visuals, why would he have put such significance behind radar visual cases? Well, he was a science advisor to the U.S. Air Force at that time, and Hynek, of course, was investigating this for the Air Force, and skeptically so. The best cases would be those which would utilize the best available technology that would help substantiate certain reports, and the best technology available at that time arguably was radar, immediately after the war, of course, and with the Air Force and its involvement in UFO cases, you know, radar was going to be probably the chief technological means by which a sighting, a visual sighting, might be corroborated. But today we've got others. You know, in this era in which we all carry little smartphones around in our pocket with cameras on them, I mean, many people can use a smartphone not just to be able to capture video or a photograph, but they can also use things like Flight Radar 24, which is an app that lets you determine what kind of aircraft are in the sky and where they are at any given time. You can use photo programs to determine the time and place a photograph was taken. You've got stargazing apps that help you distinguish various celestial phenomena, and most of them do a lot without really having to pay much for them. There's some great free stargazing apps. You've got satellite tracking apps like Sputnik, and I have a lot of these on my phone. And so the thing is I began to think that, gosh, you know, if people use them in the right way, hypothetically, you can use a smartphone like a little multifunction device for studying strange things that you might see in the sky and in likelihood discerning, you know, those things which can be identifiable from those which truly might remain unidentifiable. So in the modern era, rather than just saying radar visuals, the fourth tier I describe is objects that can be corroborated with radar or maybe with satellite, like global positioning, photographs, video, or other smartphone apps. And I would also add this to it, electromagnetic phenomena that can be observed using such things as an electromagnetic field detector or an RF detector. going all the way back to Edward Ruppelt's report on unidentified flying objects from 1950. Well, I guess the original edition was 56. He had talked about, in one chapter, scientists that claimed that in conjunction with UFO sightings, there were variances in radiation, background radiation that could be discerned. So something like a Geiger counter or an electromagnetic field detective device should be able to help corroborate UFO reports just as well.
So now that you've heard all that, let us have the final entry.
Well, there are two, actually. Objects that interact physically with individuals or the environment. And this is, again, a simple classification that deals with a lot of stuff, Gene. We're talking about objects that interact with, perhaps they leave ground markings. You know, Chris O'Brien, with a lot of his research with the cattle mute phenomena, certainly has involved himself in instances where there are markings found on the ground near some of these carcasses. If it interacts with an individual, again, a person says that the object flashes light at them. A person says they're moved by the object. A person says they're taken aboard a craft. You know, any of these kind of things. Animal disturbance would qualify, too. It's a very simple classification system that deals with a broad range of different phenomena. And part of the reason I consolidate those is because there are fewer reports these days that seem to involve these kind of things, where people interact with a UFO or they're, you know, capable of getting close to a grounded one. And I don't know why, but Nick Redfern's talked about this as well. And I've found a number of articles online. There seemed to be a marked decline in these kind of close encounter type cases. And then the final is objects accompanied by beings or apparent operators, because however few they may be today, some people do still report this kind of thing. But I think that this simplification of the classification system helps to look at this phenomena in the modern era with respect to the new technology, both present in the skies and that which we have available to us to try and study it.
Okay, I'm going to ask you about this, and let's continue our next segment, because certainly these topics have come up in questions from listeners. And that is, we're not having these real close encounters like the CE3 or whatever you want to call it. Why is that? Why do we not have these close-up sightings as we did a while back? Some people say, you know what? For the most part, the UFO phenomenon no longer occurs. And that if you put things together, you can take all those sightings, those distant sightings of UFOs, and they probably have conventional explanations, in which case there is no longer a UFO mystery. This is a very skeptical question because I've expanded upon the lack of the close encounters. So let's continue with that. We have Micah Hanks, and he's from the Graylian Report. Chris O'Brien's on Walkabout. With Gene and Micah, you're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code Night Owl. Use the coupon code Night Owl to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
There's nothing more enticing and intoxicating than the finest meat cooking on an open flame. Freeze-dried meat from NewHarvest.com is U.S.-grown, 100% all-natural with no extra fillers. Just grass-fed beef and free-range chicken guaranteed to stay fresh and delicious. Add New Harvest freeze-dried meats to your current food storage. You'll buy direct from the factory, not a third party, ensuring the best price and the highest quality. See all our products at NewHarvestFoods.com. That's NewHarvestFoods.com.
Piedmont Attorney Spokesperson Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with Principal Office in Houston, Texas is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24/7. Call 800-261-0937. That's 800-261-0937.
Are you worried about your mom or dad living alone in their house? Hi, I'm Joan London. Listen, I know how difficult it is to find senior care for someone you love. That's why I recommend a free service called A Place for Mom. They are the nation's largest senior living referral service. Call A Place for Mom today.
To receive free information on senior living communities in your area, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-704-6182.
A Place for Mom offers free one-on-one advice from local advisors and a personalized list of senior living communities you can visit. If you have questions about senior care for your mom or dad, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
Call A Place for Mom in the next 10 minutes to get your free ebook on financing senior care as well as free information on senior living communities in your area. Call 1-800-704-6182. That's 1-800-704-6182.
Worried about lead, fluoride, and other contaminants in your drinking water? Get a ProPure with the Pro-1 G2.0 cleanable reusable filter and remove up to 200 contaminants. Drink water the way nature meant it to be. Clean, crisp, and refreshing. See the complete line of ProPure products, including the new ProMax shower filter. There's a ProPure for you. Visit your authorized ProPure dealer for details or ProPureUSA.com. That's ProPureUSA.com or 800-544-3533.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So as we progress towards the two-thirds mark of this show, with Micah Hanks of the Graylian Report, I'm going to ask that question again. So if we're having fewer of these close encounters, why is that? And does that indicate possibly that all the other sightings might have conventional explanations that the UFO phenomenon has left us?
You know, it's maybe one of the most important questions that can be asked today. And I realize, by the way, that, you know, Gene, you know, we're being very skeptical. And frankly, I'm sure in this last segment where we were giving all these rapid fire breakdowns of, well, this is why we've changed this, and this is why I've instituted what I call a new classification system, a stripped down new approach. I realize some people's eyes are probably glazing over and they're falling asleep because these aren't these meaty, juicy, tantalizing stories of contact with aliens and landed craft. This is the kind of thing that people like to hear, but if we're really seriously trying to study UFOs and we're not just trying to be storytellers around a campfire, sometimes we have to break away from those juicy stories. Sometimes we have to step away from, you know, the literature that seeks to entertain and thrill rather than really understand. And that's what we are trying to do here. And so for the serious-minded UFO enthusiast or podcast listener, for that matter, that's what we're trying to break down right now. And so I'll make no apologies for, at times, having to get really detailed with the scientific interpretation. Now, coming back to your question, because this is exactly what we're talking about, you know, a study in which these kind of juicy reports are lacking because in the culture present today, there are fewer of them. And I think maybe it's time that we do look at things scientifically, but why do we see less today? Why are there, you know, fewer cases that involve landed craft that people approach and suddenly they've been burned after, you know, a gust of heat is blasted out of this thing as the door shuts and it takes off into the sky? Why are fewer people, you know, lifted off the ground and knocked out and found aboard a craft in which they're surrounded by strange human-esque beings? Why do we have fewer of these kind of cases? Why do we have fewer people who are coming forward with nighttime encounters saying, yeah, I too have been one of the abducted? What is changing? It's interesting. We could look at it in a number of ways. Let's first look at it in terms of an extraterrestrial phenomena, because I think it's fair to do that. Whether or not I endorse that idea, I'm open to that possibility, as many, I think, skeptically minded UFO researchers would be. If we have good evidence that is forthcoming, I'm happy to say, okay, if that's the most likely interpretation, ET it is. But the thing is that I think that if we were to deal with an ET phenomenon, and let's say that immediately after the Second World War, they'd been here all along as valet and and many of the modern ancient alien theorists have even argued, maybe after the Second World War and our humankind's entry into the nuclear era, it really was a beacon, and it really garnished their attention. They come down, they say, okay, now these guys, the kid gloves are off. You know, now they're playing for keeps. So they come to Earth. Maybe there's not just one group. Maybe there's not just one civilization. Let's say that, and this is a hypothetical, so follow me here. Let's say they all are descending on Earth, the Intergalactic Federation, you know, people, you know, from all different parts of the galaxy are coming here. People, I say, but aliens and sent, you know, they're coming down. They're taking soil samples. They're, you know, taking people. They're examining things. They're checking out our, you know, weapons installations. They're checking out our nuclear plants. And they spend several decades involved in various different kinds of investigative work here on Earth. And they make their assessment, and the different nations and the United Nations of alien civilization.
Of course, we call that the Federation.
Yes. In this hypothetical structure we do, yeah. And as they go back and they all file their reports, and the different nations compare, and they do exactly what we here on Earth essentially do with our international politics, they present their reports and they say, well, our best assessment is that these people aren't really close enough yet to getting off their mud ball and bringing these dangers to us that we should worry yet, and so we'll leave them alone for a while. And there's been a marked decrease, and over the last few years, we see fewer instances of abductions and encounters and interactions because maybe, well, there's been less interest by the so-called operators of these UFO craft. Now, I know that sounds like something out of a sci-fi movie, and I intend it to be, because maybe that, for all we know, is what's actually going on. And when I've heard people like Valet in the past argue that there's far more going on with UFO phenomena to account for a scientific investigation being carried out by an alien species, I say, well, which alien species and how many? If these were extraterrestrial aliens, who is to say it was all just one that was carrying out these activities on Earth? You know, if there were multiple different ET groups that had been doing this kind of thing, I mean, sure, the body of UFO literature, especially that was collected between the 50s, 60s, and 70s, might account for that scientific investigation. And who are we to say, with our own anthropomorphization, I guess, of the phenomena, that we would understand the motives and the necessities of alien science, you know? So I'm not trying to debunk Valet, but I am trying to say that I think that we need to be very careful that we haven't allowed ourselves to project our own expectations of science onto an alien species. Now, coming back to the anti-ET argument, though, I mean, really, despite all the conjecture I've just presented, there is really no good evidence that ET is at the source of all this phenomena. It could be any number of things in equal measure based on the scant data that we have before us. So let's look at it as a sociocultural thing, Gene. I mean, if it's something that culturally is changing, I have to point out initially what comes to mind is that as UFO sightings and contactee and abductee reports seem to diminish with time, there seems to be an inverse proportionality that appears with the growth in our technology. And as we become more technologically advanced, and as perhaps in an insidious way, the advancement of technology works steadily more into our lives with Wi-Fi, smartphones, GPS, I mean, surveillance, all of these kind of things. As we are ever more trending toward a technologically proficient society and it immerses itself in our lives and culture, we do see a marked decline in UFOs proportionally. So could it be that technology and our own intelligence as it relates to technological growth, are these things affecting interest in and perception of UFOs? You know, there are any number of ways it might be interpreted, but I think that the point is that one has to note that it certainly has changed. We don't have the kind of hairy dwarf reports that were once present in the APRO journals and things. And it's really perplexing to me.
Well, this, of course, is a serious question with regard to the UFO mystery. Has ET left us? But that presupposes there is an ET and that ET actually came here to perform some kind of scientific research.
Right.
It may just be that our culture has moved on and we expect different things now.
Yes. Yeah, that is certainly, I think, something that's worthy of considering. I mean, has the entire UFO meme? See, I don't doubt that there's a phenomena. And I saw one of the bloggers a while back saying, it's time that we go ahead and we just accept that Valet was wrong. You know, Valet has said, what if there's a control mechanism? What if there's something that is, you know, even on a subversive level, subconsciously controlling and changing and maybe even causing sort of a conscious evolution? You know, we just have to accept that Valet was wrong. And I remember reading that blog and saying, but is that really accurate? I would say that really, with or without an actual UFO phenomena. Let's say the entire thing can be chalked up to misidentification of prosaic phenomena. If that were the case, the concept of alien life and UFOs have nonetheless had an incredible effect on our culture and I think the development of our psyche. I mean, I would argue that, you know, the idea of beings traveling here from other star systems has been the number one propellant force behind engineering that has gotten us to the moon and which eventually will carry us to other planets and further out into the stars. You know, I mean, I think that every person who has ever been involved in engineering as it relates to the space program or with the independent space programs like SpaceX, you know, Elon Musk and others, ever more we are seeing that as we perfect technologies that will carry us further out into the cosmos, these people had to have at some point come across the idea or the notion that there are other civilizations that are doing it out there. And what we see is that rather than just, you know, kicking around, you know, sticks and stones at one another and building fires, you know, as our ancient ancestors did, our imaginations fuel the engineering innovations of tomorrow. And one could argue that the UFO culture and belief in it and literature associated with it has in many ways influenced our technological growth as a civilization here on Earth. So I think that really Vallée really, in a sense, was spot on in the sense that with or without there being a phenomenon, it certainly has, in a way, helped steer our development and our interests, and it is still doing so today.
Flying saucers are here to make us think, as I've said for many years. So having made us think about the possibility of life in outer space, they've done their deed. We are now discovering the possible presence of extrasolar planets, possible life-bearing planets. We're still moving along in the space program. In fact, Elon Musk of SpaceX is saying he plans to send an unmanned rocket ship to Mars in 2018, far ahead of NASA's plans. And where does that take us next? Well, to the possibility of if we can send the spaceship there and it succeeds, what about sending humans to Mars by 2020, which is quite a bit faster than what NASA's talking about in a very disappointing estimate of the 2030s. More to come with Micah Hanks and Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
As you know, neighbors, web hosting can be pretty cheap, but not all hosting is the same. DreamHost wins best of awards year after year. You get unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, and even the low-cost plans put your sites on high-performance SSDs. Want to know more about what DreamHost has to offer? Go to technightowl.com/host. Once again, that's technightowl.com/host.
I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I impartially shopped the highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $26 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 1-800-403-4885. That's 1-800-403-4885. 1-800-403-4885. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all.